Hi, this is Morty Lefko with another podcast for Emotional Eating. Today we have a very special guest, Bill Cashel. He's got an emotional diet, which is a revolutionary new program that focuses on what he considers to be, quote, the real problem with people who are overweight. And even though he calls it an emotional diet, it is not actually another diet that forces you to use willpower. So let's find out what his ideas are and how maybe something he has to say will enable those of us who have a problem with overeating, with emotional eating, maybe it's going to help us discover what it's going to take to stop our overeating. So if we can stop overeating, perhaps our problems can be solved, and maybe Bill can help us solve it. So welcome, Bill. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Morty. Thank you for inviting me.
Bill Cashel, C-A-S-H-E-L-L. Where are you located, Bill?
Morty, I'm located in Omaha, Nebraska, right in the center of the United States.
Oh, that's exciting. Tell us a little bit, if you would, please, how you got involved in the area of emotional eating. What made you decide to try to help people stop their overeating problem? How'd that all start for you?
Well, Morty, like so many people, it was desperation. That was my inspiration, because I would have a problem. And when I was younger, I was so active and involved in a lot of sports and so forth, so I could get away with eating quite a bit, but I often ate the wrong kinds of foods. But I kept gaining weight and gaining weight. The problem I found, Morty, was I tried diet after diet, and I could stick to it for a few days, but then I'd go off it and go right back where I was. So I started studying other techniques. I became certified in hypnosis, neuro-linguistic programming, emotional freedom techniques, several other techniques, and what I found was when I combined them all together, Morty, and started searching for the real cause, then I started having success. Once I had success, then I started helping other people by doing seminars and eventually writing a book on it.
And what's the name of your book?
The name of the book is called The Emotional Diet, How to Love Your Life More and Food Less.
Uh-huh, and where can people find that?
You can find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and some of the bookstores, and also possibly at your local library.
Okay, so it's The Emotional Diet. So tell
right.
us a little bit about what it is you actually do that helps people stop overeating.
Well, to put it simply, Morty, it's like I told a friend of mine. I said, I believe anybody who eats more than they need is an emotional eater. At that point, she replied, well, I'm not an emotional eater. I just love food. And, of course, I said, well, what's love? And she chuckled, said, I guess that's an emotion. And there are a couple different ways that people become emotional eaters. One thing, we form a lot of attachments throughout our life to food. We create what in NLP terms is called an anchor. You feel good. For example, one of my favorite examples is cake. Often I ask people, when do you think of cake? And they say, well, parties, celebrations, birthdays, things like that. So what happens, Morty, is you see the cake and you're feeling really good, and you create association of feeling good eating the cake. You go to another party, another birthday, you feel good, you eat the cake. Pretty soon you walk through a store, you see a cake, and bang, you have that urge. Now, the real urge is not so much the cake, but it's the feeling underneath that, because all human behavior is driven by a desire to feel good. Now, that goes even further for people who, what we tend to think of as emotional eaters, and that is people who eat strictly to feel good. And often it's because they're feeling bad. So what they're doing is using food as a substitute, something to change their body chemistry, but it really doesn't solve the root problem, the root cause of why they're feeling bad in the first place. So when we get to that and find out what the real issue is and resolve that, then their need to eat to feel better goes away. So a couple different ways to approach that. I hope that kind of explained it.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much consistent with my own research and my own point of view, that the main source of emotional eating is negative feelings, boredom, feeling unlovable, feeling anxious, feeling angry. So we have negative feelings that we don't want to experience. So we get conditioned to eat as a way of distracting ourselves from the negative feeling or putting a good feeling on top of the negative feeling.
Right, I agree completely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I think there's also some beliefs involved, but it's some combination of our beliefs and our and conditioned triggers. So,
right.
So once, if that's the case, what do you do if people are conditioned to eat when they are bored or anxious or feeling unlovable or depressed? What do you do to help people not need to eat in those situations?
Well, one of the first things is to create different anchors, as I said, or different associations to food and feeling good. And one of the ways, some simple things, as I said, is to reframe things. For example, a lot of it has to do with the way we look at food, the way we feel about food. A good example of this, I sometimes will ask people, would you sit down and eat a big bowl of flour with a spoon? Now, of course, they'll say no. And I'll say, well, what about a big bowl of white sugar and a spoon? Would you eat that? Well, gosh, no. And then I'll ask, well, what if we gave you a big tub of Crisco and a spoon? Would you eat that? And, of course, that's pretty sickening. And then I said, well, what if we put them all together and called them donuts? Would you eat that? And all of a sudden, it's like a light bulb goes off, and they think, well, wow, here are foods that I wouldn't eat by themselves, but we mix them together, then we call them donuts. And so it reframes the way they think of these foods and the way they picture them. I mentioned that to one lady I was working with, and a couple days later, people brought donuts into the where she worked. And she'd always been a big donut eater, and she said, the donuts look good, they smell good, but just looking at them, she kept getting this image of a big ring of Crisco, and she said, I just couldn't bring myself to eat them. Now, what was really great, Morty, was after a little while, everybody had eaten all these donuts, and they were feeling very sluggish and lethargic, and she said she passed up the donuts, and she felt great, and so that created a new association that passing up the donuts makes her feel good, and eating the donuts was like eating Crisco or sludge. So she created a new association. Now, that's at the simple, basic level like that. To go further, what you had talked about, some of the feelings and so forth, if somebody says, well, I don't feel lovable, I don't feel good about myself, which is often the case, as you well know, then you say, okay, what is the root cause of that? And that's where we start getting to the subconscious mind. Now, one of the things I found is that we can use things like affirmations or self-hypnosis for suggestions to say, yes, I'm lovable, or I'm worthwhile, or I deserve to feel good. The problem is, the root cause is there's been some experience or something hidden in their subconscious memory or even consciously which prevents them from feeling good. And so until you deal with that, resolve that issue, using affirmations will really have limited or temporary effects. Once they find that root cause, and I like to use something like emotional freedom techniques and things like that, which really do focus on the physical feeling, the way it's stored. The emotions often are stored, especially real strong emotions, are stored not only in our mind, but also in our physical body at a cellular level. And that's why using, for example, talk therapy sometimes won't resolve trauma. So when we use these other techniques to release those limiting beliefs or those bad memories and neutralize those, then we can follow it up with things like affirmations or self-hypnosis or feel-good techniques, and then that can start building us up. But the first trick, Marty, is to deal with those limiting beliefs and the bad memories. And that's where it all starts, in the subconscious mind.
And how do you help people eliminate those negative beliefs? If somebody didn't get a lot of attention from their parents as children and concluded, I'm not lovable, so what would you use? Which of your various techniques would be the most effective to get rid of the belief I'm not lovable?
For a case like that, I would probably start with emotional freedom techniques. And sometimes combine it. If I'm working one-on-one, the first thing I would do is think of a time, a specific event, when you didn't feel lovable. Because what you can find often, Morty, is they could have a whole childhood full of events when they didn't feel lovable, when they felt rejected and
mm-hmm.
so forth. And so what you find is if they've had a lot of events, for some people maybe it's one or two, but it's such a strong one that it left impression on their mind. they may not even be aware of it. For most people, it's a case of where repeatedly, maybe their parents didn't love them or didn't spend time with them, whatever it may be. So I tell them, think of the very strongest memory and tell me about that. Now, the interesting thing, of course, Morty, is that the subconscious mind doesn't keep track of time. We often say, well, that happened years ago. I'm way past that. Well, it doesn't really matter. If you think back to an event when you were 5 years old and you still feel some negative feelings about that, it's still affecting you at a subconscious level. And so when I have people tell them or ask them, think of your strongest event and how do you feel about that? And they'll come up with feelings like rejection or feeling bad or feeling like I'm not worth it. And so I'll say, okay, now the standard way, of course, with psychotherapy is to, when you have a bad event, is to neutralize it and basically desensitize it by reliving the event with talk therapy over and over again. Now, that can be slow and it can be painful. And if there's a lot of trauma involved, it often doesn't work. And so what I say is, let's go back to the event and tell me what the feeling is first. And then we use EFT or meridian tapping and release those feelings and get them down. Then I say, okay, now let's walk through the event and neutralize the feelings involved. You don't want to change people's memories. You don't even want to attempt that. But you want to do is let go of the feelings associated to the memory. And then you go back and say, okay, now, once we've released those negative associations, let's now see what we can do to reframe this. And so some of the reframing may be going to say, okay, what kind of childhood did your parents have? Maybe they had a similar role model in their parents. And so maybe they were doing the best they could. And so then you can go back and reframe that. Maybe you can forgive them because they didn't know any better. Maybe they had a bad childhood. And so you start to see things differently. Now, if they've had several events, you may go through these one at a time. But what you find is, after you've done a few of these by association, then you'll lose the emotional charge on the rest of them. And then once you've lost that, then all of a sudden you're feeling this thing, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy. It's no longer now something you own. It's something that somebody else gave you, but now you've given it back to them. And you say, okay, now let's think of times in your life when you did wonderful things, when you feel good. And then you reinforce those. And then that need to feel good from those emotional events or not being worthy go away. And then you don't have to have the food to replace it.
Okay. So you basically use a little bit of hypnosis and cognitive behavioral and NLP. Mm-hmm. That sounded like a lot of NLP you were using with anchoring and reframing and EFT. Right. So you basically are using a lot of different techniques in your interactions with people.
Exactly right, Morty. I know some people... I have some hypnotist friends who think that hypnosis is the only way. Some people say, oh, EFT is the only way. And my thought is, you know, the more tools you have, the better you're going to be, because I find that some people will respond better to different things. But I also find when you combine them all, then you really have much higher success rate.
What have you done any measurement? Have you done any follow-ups? There's an awful lot of people because... people can use willpower to stop eating. Very often they try some sort of technique, and it looks for the next week or so that the technique has worked because they're no longer emotionally eating and they've lost a few pounds. But if you check 6 months later, they're right back where they started. So have you done any follow-up 3 to 6, 9 months later to see whether the work you've done that seemed to be effective at the moment is still effective?
Yes, I have, Morty. In fact, when I work with people individually, and again, I do a lot of seminars, when I work with people individually, I always like to do a follow-up a month later, then 3 months, and then 6 months later to see how they're doing. And part of the reason for that, of course, is to keep touch with them and see if they've run into some challenges, because what you can find, in most cases, Morty, what I've found is they've done very, very well, not having any problems. Occasionally, I will run into something where something we didn't see, something that was unexpected, will pop up. And so we say, okay, let's deal with that. And then once we resolve that, then they're fine. But for the most part, yes, they've done very well. One of the other things I found, too, I sometimes do work with organizations. For example, a company may call me in to do a seminar there. Now, one of the things I like to do after I do a seminar is then I set up a weekly call-in for a time where I'll call in and they can be there as a group. And the two things that I find that really help is the follow-up keeps them going, but also the group interaction, the group support is really wonderful. So just their idea of getting together as a group helps support each other.
Great. In your private sessions, how do your private sessions work? Do you work with people on the phone or on Skype?
I do occasionally work with them on the phone or by Skype. Most of the time it's one-on-one, but I do, you know, with technology, that's the great thing is you can work with people any place and any time. So,
How do your sessions work? How long, how many sessions do people generally need in order to produce this success rate that you've been able to achieve?
The way I like to do it, Morty, is I like to do 5 sessions because I found that seems to be the optimal amount for covering almost everything. And I cover a lot of different things as well. Part of the session has to do with, again, using these techniques, but part of it has to do with retraining their mind. As you said, some of the cognitive behavior therapy and techniques. Also, sometimes it's just education for them and learning different techniques and how to handle things. So I find 5 sessions, as I said, to be really, really the best.
And how long are your sessions?
They're generally about 90 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the last half hour of that is doing hypnosis session.
Okay, so like an hour of EFT or cognitive behavioral or talking, and then about a half hour of hypnosis, and you do 5 of those, and mm-hmm. follow up 1, 3, 6 months later, and you've got pretty much 100% success rate.
Pretty close. And when I say pretty close, occasionally I'll give an example of one woman who after 3 months, she said, you know, I just haven't had any change in my weight. And I said, well, let me ask this. First of all, how do you feel? She says, I feel terrific. I have energy. I'm exercising. I'm eating all the right foods. And I thought, that's interesting. And so I said, have you gone to a doctor and had been tested, things like thyroid and so forth? And she said, no, but I will do that. Well, she did find out that she did have a thyroid problem. So that was a case of where she, in spite of the fact she hadn't lost any weight, she did say that she felt terrific, she was healthier and feeling good. And one of the things I think that's so important is that people look past their weight. One of the things I often tell people is don't focus on your weight, because your current weight is a result of your current behavior. I think that's where diets fail, is people are always trying to change their weight. They say, I want to lose 20 pounds, and then I can go back to eating ice cream and pizza. And when they change back their old behavior, they go back to where they were. I always tell people, forget the weight, hide your scale, don't even think about that. Focus on changing your behavior. When you do that, your weight will take care of itself. So my whole focus, as I said, is on behavior changes.
Well, if people are interested in getting more information about your program or to contact you for possibly working with you, what's the best way to find you, Bill?
The best way, Morty, you could go to the website. It's called emotionaldiet.com. There you can find information about the seminars I do and doing consultations and my book and just about anything else, as well as contact information.
Okay. So your book, Bill, is The Emotional Diet, which is a discussion of this program and how it works. And if you're interested in contacting Bill directly or finding out more about his one-on-one sessions or possible group sessions, you can go to emotional, E-M-O-T-I-O-N-A-L, emotionaldiet.com. Thank you so much, Bill. This is really fascinating. It's a somewhat different approach than anything I've heard before, and I think that people that are listening to this interview and reading the transcript of this might get some food for thought, and people who are trying to stop overeating might get some ideas that they haven't had before as to a technique or an approach that might be more effective than other things they've tried. So thank you so much for your time today, and hopefully some of the people will follow up with you and try to get some more information from you.
Well, thank you so much, Morty. I love the work that you're doing and all the help that you're giving to people, so I applaud you for that. It's been great talking to you.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.